Hello, and welcome back to the Death and Grief Talk podcast. I'm your host, Joelle Simone Maldonado, also known as the Grave Woman. Loss and grief have a magical and peculiar way of propelling our personal and spiritual journeys in directions that in many times results in us showing up for ourselves and in the world in ways that differ from the versions of ourselves that we had sketched in our minds. For many, spirituality becomes less about subscribing to what some consider to be outdated traditions and more about seeking answers and guidance from divine sources, both seen and unseen. When embarking upon transformative spiritual journeys, many seek guidance from those gifted in communicating with the other side. One such person is Shauna Temple. I was blessed to find and connect with Shauna via social media. Instagram to be exact, where she shares jewels of wisdom, readings, and real spiritual talk with her nearly 20,000 followers daily. During our time together today in this episode of the Death and Grief Talk podcast, Shauna and I candidly discuss everything from what left-handed work is, what she defines as root work, the necessity of elevating one's ancestors, to why it is important not to rush into setting up ancestral altars immediately after someone dies and we embark upon our journeys with grief. Hello, Shauna, and welcome to the Death and Grief Talk podcast. I'm really excited to have you. Why don't you introduce yourself in a few words?
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the invitation. Excited as well. Hey, everybody. My name is Shauna, aka Ocean's Light. And I am, I like to categorize myself as a healer. And pretty much covers it. But I can be found on Instagram at Ocean's Light.
Awesome. And that's actually how I discovered you. On Instagram. I don't know, maybe someone was following you and you popped up in my feed. I don't know, but I'm so grateful that I did find you because I like your directness in delivery. You were talking a second ago and you said that you refer to yourself as a healer. Mm-hmm. And I can say to an extent, you've been very instrumental in my healing journey around some grief and around some, deciphering. You're welcome. Thank you. But deciphering some of my journey, as you know, I'm a funeral director and now like an online personality thing, whatever that is. And I really struggled with monetizing my gifts because they're around something so sensitive, which is death and grief. Mm-hmm. And one of the most instrumental things that you have done for me was the creation of this Lionsgate portal oil. And the Lionsgate reading that you gave me a couple weeks ago for the Lionsgate, where you, I'm getting emotional thinking about it. You basically told me, and I don't mind sharing this, in the reading that I had a choice to make whether between the spiritual or continuing down my death care path. One would be lucrative, one would be more challenging, but equally rewarding. And I don't really know what direction I'm going in yet, but I just appreciate your obedience and your connection to spirit because you deciphered a lot of what I was feeling and didn't know that I was feeling.
Wow. It's really, I'm very humbled by this. And people always tell me, oh, you're so humble. You're so humble, you know, blah, blah. But it's just like, how can you not be standing in the awe of spirit and being able to channel that and to help people? Whenever I get feedback, I'm just like, I'm so excited. And to see one of my babies, the oil, it's just amazing for me. And I'm so glad that I was able to help you in that way. That means a lot to me. So thank you for sharing that. I truly appreciate it. Thank you. I needed that. I got a sticker, everybody.
So I want to know a little bit about you. I know that you are
extensively educated, extensively well-versed in religion and culture and spirituality. I want to know a little bit about how your journey in the healing work began and how you transferred from your quote unquote day work job to now being fully immersed in helping people online through spiritual work and healing.
Okay. So just a really quick rundown. I'm the daughter of a Baptist pastor. I was a minister of music in my dad's church. I became disillusioned with the church. And this was it was a fairly decent sized church. I give about 600-700 members. The more that I learned, the more I started to notice that people were talking the talk, but not walking the walk. And I know that has nothing to do necessarily with religion, but then my father would come home being just about as not happy as I was. So I resigned from the church, wrote his letter of resignation, and he used it 2 weeks later. As my dad was in seminary, we were always talking about religion and that type of thing around the house. So that was very, very normal. But he was also a conspiracy theory type guy. And so we would talk about other things that weren't just theology. Fast forward to, I went to Baylor University. So while I was there, I took world religion courses and actually met a group of people who were Muslim. And started studying Islam. I mean, like, I just went to the bookshelf and started here and just started reading to actually convert them. And it backfired. So I was a Muslim for 20 years of my life, practicing Muslim. That kind of, as I continued to learn, I was more into the mystical side of Islam. So I was more into Sufism and that. And so that kind of translated more into me learning about divination is kind of where it started. I was at the time working for a prominent school district here in the Houston area at the district level, but continued working with my spirituality. So it was kind of two of pentacles. I was juggling two things. What ended up happening was they found out about my side gig. And it came down to a choice of what I was going to do. And so I decided to hang that up. I had been working on in this capacity for about two and a half years at that point. And so about 2 years ago, coming up on 2 years, I will be a full-time practitioner and counselor. So my background, I have two master's degrees in counseling psychology. And I'm pursuing a PhD, it's a PsyD in theocratic studies. So that's more of the mystical side again of psychology and occult and magic and all of that. So that's kind of how it all worked out. So now I'm fully immersed in it, which has been an amazing blessing for me and hopefully for other people as well.
That is mind-blowingly phenomenal. It's almost like the perfect recipe for where you are right now.
Actually, I was a little surprised myself. I was like, wow, this is really working out. It was a long journey. This was not, obviously, was not an overnight thing. But, you know, I'm thankful for the journey. So
you said a lot of words. You said that while you were a practicing Muslim, you were more interested in the mystical side. And you used the word I'd never heard before that started with an S. What was that word?
Sufism. So there's the mystical side of like Christianity, which is Gnosticism, Judaism. It's more Kabbalic studies. And for Islam, it's Sufism. If you've heard of Rumi, the whirling dervishes, it's more of God is love. And there's the mysteries behind God and that type of thing versus the more strict adherence to the tenets of Islam.
And you also used the word divination and you said the origins of divination. What are the origins of divination?
Right. Well, actually, I was kind of talking about like how I got started. So my origin story was started with divination. But if you think about it, divination or wanting to know what's going to happen in the future, wanting to know things that you can't see behind the veil. I mean, humans are very curious. So there have been tons of ways. My preferred way is using tarot. I use Lenormand or Lenormand, depends on where you're from and how you want to pronounce it. So using cards to get the answers of things that I can't see or the client can't see. There's also runes, bones, shells. There's, depending on where you are in the world, smoke, tea leaves, there's a lot of them. So, but those are my preferred.
It's funny you mentioned tea leaves because my my grandmother's great aunt, I think, that raised her. My grandmother's great aunt. She tells a story about how her great aunt used to read tea leaves. And I'm like, yes. I'm like, what? What do you mean you read tea leaves? Tell me more. But of course, grandmother being devout Christian, Southern Baptist, she calls them the pillars. She said, in our family, we have a history of carrying the pillars. And I don't know what that means. I'm still trying to get her to tell me more. Mm. She said that she rejected it. Mm-hmm. My mother will tell you herself, she's rejected it. And when I say it, I mean the gift of sight. I don't want to say intuition because I don't feel like you can, you can reject your intuition. They're very intuitive women, but just what you're saying, the mysticism of it, but I'm fully embracing all of it. And I almost feel like I got her portion, my mom's portion, and then some in between. So that leads me to ask if someone feels like they're spiritually inclined or inclined to mysticism, where's a good place to start?
Wow. If someone is inclined specifically to mysticism, so gifts, like you're talking about sight and so forth, good place to start would be, I'm going to say, working with someone who is also gifted. That's where I would strongly recommend. I was, and still am to some degree, solitary. So trying to work that out yourself when you don't have someone who can kind of guide you can be a challenge. A lot of people fall off because they don't know what's happening to them. They're not sure how to decipher things. They're not sure what the next steps are. And so you end up skipping steps if you don't have a way to really. And it's not like you have to follow a straight up ladder, but there are certain things that you want to do. A lot of people don't want to hear someone say meditation, or at least at the bare minimum, sitting in some sort of silence and asking for guidance. People don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear peace be still, like just sit down for a second and open yourself, your higher self, up to receive the guidance that you need. So those would be the two. One, allow yourself to be able to connect. If you have gifts, it should be fairly easy. And then also have someone to kind of help you to navigate some of that.
I was watching a video you posted this morning about everything having a cost. And it made me chuckle because I tell my husband all the time, like, this shit is expensive, and not necessarily monetarily, but energetically. Operating in my highest character to the best of my ability, and God knows I fall short, but there's a responsibility. And my mom keeps telling me, to whom much is given, much is expected. What has the cost been for you?
Oh my God. Gosh, a lot. Not in any particular order. A relationship, definitely. Time away from family, because there are times when you are made aware of things, like tower moments, things that you believed and the things that you knew. You thought you knew, and then suddenly, oh, none of that was right. You kind of get in your feelings a little bit. The time that you spend, and it's well spent, in meditation or reading or research or whatever it is that you need to do, is time taken away from other things. So time away from family, a relationship. I am going to have to say that there was some time that I was pretty depressed. So a lot of things kind of went a certain type of way. Of course, there's the financial part of it. I put that pretty low on the list because the time and the relationships lost a lot of well, they're friends. I mean, they're people that are, they're good people. We're just not going in the same direction. And the further I go this way, the less I'm interested in entertaining their surface level conversations. And they don't know that it's surface level. And I would have had those same conversations a couple of years ago, but it's just not. It's not that I want to sit around and talk about the ether and ethos and all of that. That's not it. But it's just like, you're talking about people versus talking about ideas or talking about plans. Like I don't care. So yeah, it's been a pretty heavy cost, but worth it.
Thank you for sharing that. For many people, the catalyst into their spiritual journey or discovery or willingness or force, they're forced to sit still is with grief a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And you and I share, again, that background of the religious upbringing. And one of the first things to go for many people is the shedding of that layer of mm-hmm. the religion we've been taught. Myself, I grew up very Christian. I grew up in a Southern Baptist church, borderline holiness. And so I know the Bible. I can go verse for verse. But unless those things are applicable to your spirit and your soul, what are they really doing? That was the question I had to ask myself. And so if you could talk about some of the layers that you've shed during this metamorphosis into this healer.
Mm-hmm. Some of the layers that I've shed. I think the first one, well, you have to remember I was Muslim first before mm-hmm. I moved into this. So the shedding of the Christian background was years and years and years ago. So I was able to move past a lot of the church hurt before I moved into this. So sometimes I deal with people who are very fresh. And so there's a lot of hurt and there's a lot of not wanting to look at sacred texts. Like they'll be really great about, well, you know, I was reading the Vedas and I was reading this and, you know, and Buddha said, I'm like, okay, right. But the Psalms, and they don't want to hear that. So even though it's, you know, I try to talk to them about, but it's a process. So shedding some of the layers, preconceived notions. That was big because when a lot of people, their introduction to someone like me is through social media. And so they expect a healer to look a certain type of way. And when you don't look that way, people think, oh, that's not what she does. Or this person over here is, you know, floating in a river and all this other stuff. So this has to be have more substance than the person who's sitting here writing books and, you know. So I had to do that as well. I had to shed, as far as moving into my spiritual path, some prejudices, a lot of fear, fear of just the other side and working with the dead. And if you go back, probably no one would, but go way back in my feet, I was like, I don't want to see anything. If I see anything, I'm going to lose my mind. And I was point blank. And so I shut down that gift. Like you were saying, it was kind of hard to shut down your intuition. You can shut it down if you're just like vocal. I don't want, I don't want, I don't want. So getting over a lot of fear and then getting over, for me personally, and I'm still working on this, is getting over, how do I want to put it? Fear of messing up. Fear of messing up. It's when you're, this is me personally, because I'm pretty old school. When you're dealing with someone and someone's life and someone's faith, and like the path of their life, I'm overly hard on myself because I don't want to be the weak link here that could, one, not produce the results that they're paying for that they want, that I misinterpret something, or perhaps I didn't ask enough questions to get the information that I needed to do the work. Or it is something that I say that could inadvertently turn someone off. Not that I'm meaning to do that. So if you have someone, it's like someone, let's use church. Someone walks into the church one day, of course you want them to feel comfortable. You want them to stay. You want them to come back. You want them to receive the message. But if you're in the pulpit and you say something that could turn that person off, you may not see that person again. And that may be the last time they walk into a church. So there is a great responsibility that, and it's almost crushing, that I put on myself that I'm trying to back away from. There's many things that I'm like, oh, this is a great message, but I'm thinking it may not be received correctly. And that might be something that could turn someone away. And now they're just lost. Well, I tried this. You know, this didn't work for me either. So, I hope I answered that question correctly.
You did. You absolutely did. And I can relate to that, especially with social media. It's like you never know, at least I'll speak for me personally, I never know where someone is in their grief journey. And so I don't want to say something that makes them feel like they aren't where they should be, because that should not exist.
Exactly. You hit 100%. I agree with you.
So
I agree with you on this side too.
You said turning people off to certain things. And with spirit, it is my belief that we live in a world of duality, both in this side and on the other side. There's good, there's bad. And there's everything in between. And the thing that I love about your content and what I see represented in the services that you offer is that you seem to be able to show up as a vessel and a messenger, deliver the message. It's not personal. It's almost like I see your obedience, if that makes sense, even if it's uncomfortable. One thing that makes people uncomfortable, especially when talking about death and grief and the other side, is the fact that there are good entities, good spirits, good energy, and then there are also bad entities, bad spirits, and bad energy. You talk a lot about left-handed work, and you were the first person I heard use that phrase. Could you elaborate on what that is and a little bit about the duality of working in the spirit realm?
Okay, sure. So I don't want to miss working in the spirit realm. So I'm going to write that down. So left and right-handed work. So you're talking about duality, which is a perfect segue into this. I'm sure you planned that. But you know, we have two hands, right? So yin and yang, there's night and dark. So there are two sides to everything, absolutely everything. And you're right. A lot of people haven't heard left-handed work. Someone said on my page, but I'm left-handed. I'm like, oh, wait, okay. I assumed previous knowledge. So right-handed work is considered to be, and this is a hoodoo specific term, I think, but it's used a lot in hoodoo. So right-handed work is going to be your money work, your love work, your health, you know, that type of thing, blessing type work. Your left-handed work is going to be more of your curses, hexes, jinx, you know, that type of thing. Things that just, you know, things aren't going to go well for somebody. I am very comfortable with using both hands. I wasn't that way before. I was a little bit like, oh, I'm not exactly sure, because of the fact that I guess I had been indoctrinated into turn the other cheek. And basically the cheek was at that point missing. I was like, you know what? This is ridiculous. I'm getting my ass handed to me. I can't. So I went to look and I gotten to the point where, like what I was talking about in my reel today about costs and consequences, at some point it's like, you know what, if I get some blowback on this, I'm going to chalk it up to the cost of doing business, because this has to stop. Left-handed work, when it is justified, can be cathartic. Someone has just been beaten down. And so finally they're able to get, you know, have that person get their comeuppance. It can right the scales of justice. There's a lot of times that is the work that I do. It's usually, I think people know me well enough to know I'm not going to, you know, he broke up with me. So no, that's not what we're doing. However, there are people abuse spouses, some people who have been abused by the system, court case type things that happens a lot. People who have tried to seek justice in other ways, meaning that they try to do all the right things and it just didn't work out. So left-handed work could go anything from goofer, you know, using goofer dust, or you're using hot foot to get rid of someone, to a jar, to all the way to working with the dead to handle the situation. So there's a variety of things here. You mentioned about spirit. Could you repeat that one for me?
I think I said, what duality have you experienced working in the spirit realm?
Okay, so spirit specifically, the dearly departed?
Let's go there. Yeah.
Okay, well, we can go all the way there. It's been interesting. So very recently, I talked to people a lot about doing ancestral work or working with their ancestors, ancestor veneration, whatever you want to call it. The spirit world is light and dark. What people have a difficulty with is working with the light and dark of those who have passed on. Mm-hmm. There are some ancestors in their family that, you know, are high vibrational. Let's use that word. And then there are some that are low vibrational. There were some things that went on in their lives that they haven't worked through. And so there is trying to elevate those ancestors and get them to where they need to be. That is probably the lightest part of it. The next layer is going to be working with spirits of the departed that are that can help out with situations. Okay, again, it could be family members, it could be saints, it could be affinity saints and that type of thing. So that's going to be a very positive. But then on the other side, you have something like the intranquil spirit, where you have a mass of dead that are earthbound, that are murderers and all of that type of thing. And so being able to work with both sides of that. You also have angels, and on the other side, you have demons. I don't deal with that, but I do work with archangels and that type of thing. So the other side is just as light and dark as people that you see here. There's people that are really fantastic and people that are really, really not good to their core. Nothing changes. And one of the things that I'm going back to ancestors, what I think that our society has, I don't know, whitewashed it, is that when somebody dies, suddenly they're an angel. Or when somebody dies, suddenly they're a great person. No. If they were a jerk here, they're probably going to be the same jerk. And so people get confused about that when they make their altars. They'll put people up on their altar and the energy is terrible. Well, it's because these people over here that you have on your altar, and it's all sweet and nice, and then you put Uncle Fred, and Uncle Fred did some things, and now it's weird, and you have to elevate that ancestor. So a lot of people get confused, and I'll do candles for people, and it's just black, black like paint. And I show them, and I'm like, who's this? Like, we need to figure out who it is. This is not working. We need to do some more work. Actually, they need to do some work to elevate that ancestor. So, yeah.
So many questions.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. This is awesome. So firstly, you mentioned the word ancestors. Mm-hmm. What is an ancestor? Because what I was taught in my culture, and I'm of Gullah and Geechee descent, not everyone that passes away becomes an ancestor.
Ah, okay. I gotcha. So yes. So usually when someone says that someone is an ancestor, okay, there are those who are like your elders. They are the ones who have a lot of knowledge. They lived really well, and those will be considered your ancestors that you call upon. Okay. For a lot of other people out here, an ancestor is literally someone that you have usually a biological tie to that has passed on. You can have adoption and things like that, of course, but it could be anybody. Okay. So that is where people run into some, well, this is grandpa and that's great, but then they don't know the whole story of grandpa. Right. And all of that. And at that point they have work to do. A lot of people don't consider allowing the dead to police themselves, where it is, you're sure about grandma. You knew grandma, you're pretty sure, you've asked other people, grandma, great, there's grandma. And then allowing grandma to kind of lead you to the next person to put on your altar. What happens is people get excited and they put everybody, and it turns into an issue. But I know exactly what my father, Gullah Geechee. There's a little bit of difference between what you're referring to and then a lot of other people. Mm-hmm.
And I love what you said about people get excited, especially when someone passes away. They're seeking a connection and a way to incorporate mm-hmm. them into their spiritual journey mm-hmm. for whatever they're motivated by, right? Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, as someone that works with these energies, is putting up a picture and setting up an altar the first thing to do?
I'm going to have to say no. Okay. I don't think that is the very first thing that you need to do. I would think that the first thing you need to do is to deal with yourself and your own grief and your motivations for why you want to have an ancestral altar. Is it literally to venerate or to ask for guidance, or is it you're putting that as another stop in your grief journey? Like they're really not gone. They're not really gone, of course, but why are you doing what you're doing and getting really clear about that intention? Because if you're using this as a crutch to not get through the grief process, at some point that altar is going to be looking some kind of way because you've healed and you're moved on. You weren't really tied to what this truly is. So having a good understanding of what this is and why, and then also at the same time as you're learning this healing and working on yourself, can make an amazing marriage of the two. And, unlock a whole other side of your spiritual path and protection and wisdom and guidance and all these good things.
I know this may seem like a dumb question, but the way that you're thinking about it, you have such a deeper understanding than I have. And I'm sure a lot of people listening or watching will have. What is the purpose of an altar?
Mm-hmm. So an ancestral or any?
Both.
Okay, great. Okay, so an altar is just usually an elevated space that is dedicated for either worship, work, or veneration. Okay, so it can be anything you want it to be. It can be a nightstand that you're not using any longer. It can be the TV stand. I've seen people use a shoebox. That's what they have at the time. There's different paths, and I don't have a coffee cup here with me, but they'll have an altar and a teacup, and that's what they have. It's great. They can put it away, especially if they live with someone that is like, what are you doing? Okay. So the first thing I want people to do is to divorce themselves from social media of seeing a wall of stuff. 9 times out of 10, people have a wall of stuff. They're not touching or know what to do with any of it. Okay. It's for aesthetics only. What you want to do with your altar, however big or however small you want it to be, it is a space for you to either do your spiritual work, whatever that is for you, wherever you start. If you're writing petitions and putting them in a box, that's great. If you're burning a bay leaf, that's great. If you've moved on to candle work, whether it's a tea light, a birthday candle, or you've got a big jumbo, that's it. But it is this place where you're actually getting something done. For an ancestral altar, this is kind of like their spot, okay? So you're wanting to have a space for them only. This is not where you put your love candle, your money candle. Those are two separate things. This is their spot. And so in that, you're going to have a picture of the deceased only. You may have a glass of water. If you don't have a beautiful wine glass, don't let people on the internet trick you into that. You don't have to. You can go to the 99-cent store. You can have a plastic cup, whatever it is. Water is a wonderful conduit of the spiritual world. And so that's why that is there. You may choose to have flowers. You may not. And you may have a tiny candle, a larger candle, whatever that is. But that is just a space for them and for you to show them, like, I made this for you. This is for you, blah, blah, blah. What you will find, the more that you work, you know, stop by, say hi by your altar. You're not spending 11 hours over there. That's unrealistic. What I do is before I go to bed tonight, I'll say a prayer for my father and I'll go to bed. It takes me about 15 seconds. However, because we're so tied and because I do have a gift of being able to hear, I walk by the altar and everybody's excited when they get bubbles. But they're tied to, I have to have bubbles in my glass. If I don't have bubbles in my glass, which is a sign of spirit activity, something's wrong because they see it on social media. Not necessarily. I'll walk by, zero bubbles. However, I've been kind of chit-chatting with him and it looks crazy, I know. And the water glass that was sitting there is full of bubbles. Why? He's not at the altar. he's over here by me. So, you know, for you have to, a lot of times with spirituality, people will teach you the framework, like building a house, the wooden frame. But how you build the walls and how you decorate the walls and how you live within that space is really you. Don't ever get caught up with, well, Shauna said it has to be like this, right? But I don't know what your ancestors want you to put on your, what should I put? Well, you might want to consider some flowers. What color? I don't know what they like. Start with white, you know? Everybody thinks you have to cook a Sunday meal. You don't have to do that. You don't have to. It's what works for you and them. Too much info?
No, that's perfect. And I love what you said about cooking a meal, because I see people, and this isn't a judgment, it's just an observation in what would happen in my life. If I were to put a plate of food on the floor in my mama's house, she would slap the hell out of me. So I would never do that. But I love what you're saying about getting detached or divorced from the aesthetics of social media.
Yes.
Because that's really not to, you know, talk down against anybody else's journey. I feel sometimes, honestly, when I see people oversharing the intimate details of their spiritual journey, it kind of makes me question the authenticity sometimes. Because there have been some experiences that I've had that have just been so sacred. That's the best word that I can use to describe it, that I don't want anybody or anything else in that moment, because it might cause a disconnect, if that makes sense.
Oh, yes. I agree with you. I agree with you completely. That was one of my issues becoming Ocean's Light or whatever. It's because I was so used to it, just stuff was just going on. But then I started to notice that people were wondering, well, is this normal? Is this not normal? What should I do? And so I began to share. But the things that I share are things that generally have happened. So I've had the opportunity to process it and then be able to teach it. In the moment, what in the Sam Hill are you doing? How? And that's why I tell them, like, listen, you're not going to get a whole lot of those videos out of me. I mean, not at all, unless I'm doing a reading and it hits me and now I'm in this personal moment. But I didn't show up for that. I showed up to do a reading. Because if you think about it, they have to set up the camera, cut it on. Then they get into the spiritual thing, stop the camera, and it's different angles. And I'm thinking, how are you pulling all this off if you're channeling or you're having some sort of road to Damascus experience? I don't know, dog. It might be, but it's a lot of, I don't know, maybe there's a lot of editing. And it's to me, it's a little much.
Then at the same time, there are also moments like this conversation that are so, like, to me, feel authentic, and I'm gaining so much and I'm gaining so many jewels, but it is recorded too. But I didn't show up for it too.
Yeah, I had no idea what we were going to talk about. It just, that's true. I got to think, that's channeling. I don't know. I got to pray about it. Giving me some thoughts to think about later.
In the vein of authenticity, something that I've noticed, and we kind of chatted a little bit about this in the DMs, is the fact that people get taken advantage of a lot, especially when they're grieving, whether it be prolonged grief or new loss or whatever. And as I said in the beginning, that was what gave me a lot of reservation in monetizing some of the services that I offer. So I guess my question is, what should people be looking for when working with a spiritual healer, particularly just for the sake of my audience around grief and death and dying, but just in general as well?
Okay. So I'm thinking about grief and death. I don't know enough about that to speak to what you should look for. I don't know. I honestly don't.
I respect however, that.
Yeah. Because I don't offer a lot of service. Well, I do ancestral reading. So there are sometimes very much mediumship where people will come through and will deliver a message. And then I do ancestral services every once in a while for people who can't do it for themselves. Sometimes during my I do counseling as well on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Sometimes we do grief counseling. But as far as a spiritualist, or if you are wanting to work with someone, I think that transparency is going to be number one. You need to see, does this person teach? Okay. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, I do lunch and learns, or I'll have a live, and I'll probably do one just a little bit. Come ask me questions. You know, if that person can't answer the questions, then there is an issue. The next thing is go back and look at their posts. Are their posts substantive, or is it just a lot of memes and funny stuff and this, that, and the other? You also probably want to look and see, does this person have other, do they have a YouTube channel where you can actually hear them talk about things? Here's one. If this is a person who works with every saint in the world, every deity, that's a little bit of a problem, because that doesn't work. There are many deities or that just don't get along. So for one person to say, I'm a daughter of this, a cousin of this and this, a devotee of this, is kind of like, well, you may think, you don't know, well, that's amazing. So where they have 5011 altars in their house? Come on, man. That doesn't work. Okay. Transparency as far as, do they have pictures of or videos of something about the service, something at all that you can see? I will do a very quick thing where people can see, yes, she did it, because you're not here. You don't know what I'm doing. So I'll send a picture of your candle. You know what it's going to look like. You will see them on fire. I don't leave it on long enough for someone to like fixate and send negativity towards it. But again, that's transparency. Pretty much, if you watch a person's live and you hear them and the things that are coming out of their mouth, you can kind of tell, is this person playing, or does this person actually have knowledge? Mm-hmm. One last thing, because this is something. Can you ask them questions about your work? Mm-hmm. If you have any question, like for example, who do you work with when you're channeling? Who are you channeling? I did a video about that. What are you going to do? Now, you're not asking the person like for their recipe, quote unquote, of what they're going to put in this work, but they should be able to speak intelligently as to why they're doing it and what they're going to do, what your part is in it, and what the outcomes should be. If they can't answer that, or they start to get sketchy, don't buy it. I don't care how cute they are, how many galloping in the river and playing and flowers dancing. I don't care about any of that. At the end of the day, that's your life that they're fooling with. That is your energy. That is your future. If they can't do all of that, and that's a lot, because people get mad in DMs. I'm not answering that. Well, probably because you don't know. We'll call it. So ask questions, definitely. And if it doesn't make sense, then ask for clarification. If they get angry, they don't know.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I feel the need to say that regardless of how much spiritual work you do, it is not a substitute for navigating your grief and going through the grieving process. I've had to decline working with people because I've felt like they were using, like you said, the work as a crutch to avoid their grief. And yeah, so just to put that out there.
I agree with what you're saying. That's the same thing we're talking about, an ancestral altar. Are you doing this to venerate your ancestors? Or are you doing this to try to spiritually or bypass the grief process? It's literally a process. Very, very true. Very true.
How would you define death, Shauna?
As a transition. I know that sounds cliche, but I do. The more that I'm into spirituality and the more that I work with or have contact with the dead, definitely a transition. It's not an ending.
So for me, I've been talking with the dead since I was a little girl, right? And I didn't know that other people could not do it, or it was a thing that people did, were afraid of. And then I learned in church about necromancy. And it completely shut me down, because it made me feel like I was doing something evil, something bad, something dangerous, right? But then again, shedding those layers and not so much divorcing from Christianity, but understanding that there are nuances to everything, I opened myself back up. And now it's almost like it comes in different forms. And what forms does talking to the dead come for you? I heard you say that you hear, right? For me, I can be in the shower and I see things in the soap bubbles on the shower curtain.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Or in dreams. Okay. Or like right now, like I can see a face in your plant behind you. Like it looks like a face to me.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised in this house.
Of course, it's not, you know, I just see the face. I don't get anything from it. But what, in what ways do you communicate?
So when it's, I call it my people, when it's my own people, I don't know how to explain it. I don't hear it like a radio. It's just, I don't know. It's like thoughts, but they're not mine. Sometimes they'll read me to filth. And so it's just, how do you explain what's happening in your head? It's thoughts, but they aren't my thoughts, but they're also not like schizophrenic, because I went to school for that. So I know that's not what's going on. When it's someone else. Okay. So this is, yeah. When it's someone else, I generally start off with cards. I think that allows me to first to get a message, but then it also shifts my mind into a different way of thinking. And then I'll see things in my mind's eye. And that's actually fairly new for me, because I have said so many times, I don't want to see anything. So now that I'm shedding that layer, it is more of, I did a reading for a gentleman, and I don't know how I knew, but it was like, okay, so this is what the house used to look like back in, this is what the cars look like. You know, this person was killed outside the house. This is who's upstairs, you know, this, that, and the other. And I'm describing the inside of this man's house in Chicago. I've never been to his house before in my life. And he was just like, oh my gosh. As far as clearing, those two people, I sent him to someone else, and it's the same two people that I saw. So for me, I can see things in my mind's eye, or I can kind of hear things. I felt things. I will get the goosebumps all over. I have been pushed or nudged. Sounds. Like I said, I'm not surprised you see something behind me, because it is what it is. You have altars in your house. In my mind, you know, for the dearly departed, all the houses kind of look the same, but it's like, that one's glowing. Like, what's going on in there? Something's going on in there. I can see that. I want to get in there. And then it's like, yeah, no, you can't stay here. I'm like, no, you're not mine. You're not one of my people. That's really cool about the soap bubbles.
Yeah. It started like 12, 13 years ago.
Really?
I was seeing shapes or images, and like a story or a timeline would show up in my head. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, but exactly.
About the day things happen that align with that soap bubble shape or story that came. Yeah. And I think it's so important what you do, not only as a healer on the mysticism side, but also as a counselor, because there's not a lot of room for cultural nuance, and a lot of cultures believe in these things, right? But if you go and tell a doctor, I see shapes and soap bubbles, I lost my mom, I'm then labeled something that I'm not. I'm having a real life spiritual experience. So that just makes you even more awesome to me.
Oh, thanks. Counseling
and thanks. People have a space they can go, like, to be safe in their journey.
That has been, I've been very thankful for that. So that was kind of like, it's been a long road, but I have some tools in my toolkit. Conversely, I have had people come to me and we're talking about things and I'm thinking, no, this is not spiritual. Honey, you're having a break here. And I've talked about that thin line between a spiritual experience and, you know, a psychological emergency. And some people can try to learn too quickly. And they expose themselves and they're just like, I want to know this. I knew this, know this. And then push themselves into spiritual psychosis. And it's like, you know, small bites.
I did that with numbers. I did. Every number I saw that was duplicate or whatever, I convinced myself every time it was something, but it wasn't. And I had to say, you know what? I need to push the brakes on this. Uh-huh. And I had to ask for guidance. Like, let me know when it's a number I need to pay attention to. Yeah. Yeah. So to know that spiritual psychosis is a real thing is very
exciting. Mm-hmm. It's a real thing. Mm-hmm.
So we're approaching the end of our time, unfortunately. I'm going to have you back for a part two. It's flown by and been such a great conversation.
It has.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. It really? Huh.
Yes. But I wanted to ask you a question. And I have to read it because I have to say it how it came to me. So it's a little lengthy, but if I need to repeat any part, let me know. And just for full transparency, I did ask Shauna this question before we got started and just to give her some time to prepare for it. But what I wrote, and this is how it came to me, was, do you believe one may rely imaginatively to the sun, may reply imaginatively to the subtle prompting of spirit? What I mean by this is that at times as we progress on our spiritual journey, we do not receive blatant in our face messages, which requires us to use our imagination to visualize and express what is being deciphered. To what extent are we or you as spiritual workers allowed to take this creative license? When does this creative liberty cross the line and become spiritual manipulation? And how do we govern? How do we self-govern? And does having counsel aid in avoiding this? Why or why not?
Wow. Aid. Okay. And then why or why not? That's a great question. That creative license and using your imagination to try to put things together and get your message. So for me personally, kind of goes back to one of the things that I'm trying to some degree, lessen the load of, I don't want to mess up. I don't want to be the person, the weakest link, because I connect to spirit, but then it's transactional distance. It's got to pass through me and I don't want to be the one to mess that up. Okay. You may get bits and pieces of something. And so you do, you get your imagination and you're trying to piece, like, okay, I got this and I got this in this message, and you're trying to fill in the blank. And so there's that, you're talking about that creative license. I see it sometimes where I'm not understanding where they're getting what they're getting, especially in divination. You'll see someone reading the cards. Okay, let me give you an example. When I do a reading, I will hold up the cards, and to some degree, I will teach as I channel. Like, these two cards mean this, this card is this. So everybody in the live knows this card means this and this, and this is how she's getting the message. Because nobody can say, I just made up some stuff. I do not just, well, what I see here is, and you don't know what I'm seeing. No, you need to see what I'm seeing. Okay, and I need to be able to tell you why I saw what I saw. That's not you questioning me in a negative way. I take it as a learning opportunity. So to some degree, when people approach a spiritual worker and they don't have any idea of what they're getting or what they're seeing, there's a lot of room for spiritual manipulation. Imagination is a great way to put that, of making up some stuff. Am I going in the right direction?
Yes.
Making up some stuff. In many cases, people are ignorant of what cards mean or what this is, and they're coming with a lot of hope, and they're coming for in times of need and fear. They just need help, and there are people who take advantage of that. You mentioned about counsel. Can you explain that part to me again?
I guess having, like you said, someone that's a little bit further along in the journey, someone that holds you accountable and says this or that, or even someone that's more experienced that you can glean from.
Ah, so you mean like someone like myself, or someone you personally know?
Well, like someone like for you, right? Like maybe someone that's your mentor in this work, but you said you're solitary. So what is your checks and balances?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I got you. Yeah. I have checks and balances. Yeah. No. Okay. So my own checks and balances, cause I'm pretty much solitary. When I say solitary, that means that I don't have people coming to my house and sitting and talking to me, and we're just like hashing stuff out. I do have coworkers. Okay. Co-workers in that I will pull cards on my own situation or someone else's situation, and I consider it to be like a professional learning committee. I had education. I was an education for it was PLC. So basically, it is other people that I feel are ethical and that they are knowledgeable. And if I am at a point where I don't know what to do, then it's like, okay, let me talk to you about this. This is what I'm thinking about doing. Is there something I'm missing here? And have someone else review it, just like doctors come together to review cases. Lawyers come together. There may be something where it's like both of us or the three of us, there's no names, everything, nobody does any of that, because I only deal with people who follow like HIPAA-ish laws, like there's ethics to this. Right. And we're still confused. We will literally... Someone will know someone that we are all okay with, or all three of us in three different locations will consult spirit, and we'll come together and say, this is what I got. And we all got the same thing. So then that one person knows, okay, I was on the right track, or I have missed the boat completely. Because you also have to remember your spiritual worker comes with their own traumas. So mm-hmm. I could see some work that I'm getting ready to do, and it triggers some stuff that happened to me back here. I got to be able to divorce that. Usually it's left-handed work, because I'm like, he did this to you? Put him in a jar! But that's not always the right way to do it, right? So I have to step back and check my own ego and say, no, we need to talk to them. So counsel can definitely be, and I am very upfront with people. If I'm talking to someone in a reading and they are like this, or if they're in the DMs asking for work, I will tell them, you need to give me a minute. There's a lot going on here. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Okay. Can I get back to you? Because I want to make sure that I'm doing the right thing here. I don't want to make the situation worse. So yeah, there you go.
Definitely. Well, before we end this session, because I'm prayerful, there will be more. I shouldn't say session, this interview. Well, I feel like it was a session because I learned so much. Before we end, tell us where we can find you and support your work.
Oh, sure. Thank you. So I am Oceans Light on IG. There's no dots. There's no dashes. I'm at like, last I checked, 19,300 followers. I have about 30 fakers. So you have to be really careful about that. I do have a podcast, Magical Moments with Oceans Light, as well as a YouTube channel. So again, and then my website, oceanslight.com. There's just no extra dots, dashes, numbers, none of that. It's just that. And that's moi. So that's how you can find me.
Awesome. Shauna, thank you so much. Thank you. I so appreciate you being willing to talk to me and share all of your amazing knowledge and information. And thank you all so much for listening, watching, and supporting the Death and Grief Talk podcast. Live life, love hard. We'll talk to you next time.